Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, June 27th, 2022. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till 11. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds goes to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week on our scripture reading. And let me get that open here. Okay, can everyone mute up? Well, maybe I should mute everyone up right now.
Yes.
Okay, if anybody wants to get into the queue, if you're on the phone, star 6 and a 1. If you got a app, there should be a button there to get into the queue. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week. As I said, we're in the Gospel of John. It's being read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 16. These things have I spoken unto you, that ye should not be offended. They shall put you out of the synagogues. Yea, the time cometh that whosoever killeth you will think that he doeth God service. And these things will they do unto you, because they have not known the Father, nor me. But these things have I told you, that when the time shall come, ye may remember that I told you of them. And these things I said not unto you at the beginning, because I was with you. But now I go my way to him that sent me. And none of you asketh me, whither goest thou? But because I have said these things unto you, sorrow hath filled your heart. Nevertheless, I tell you the truth. It is expedient for you that I go away. For if I go not away, the Comforter will not come unto you. But if I depart, I will send him unto you. And when he is come, he will reprove the world of sin, and of righteousness, and of judgment. Of sin, because they believe not on me. Of righteousness, because I go to my Father, and ye see me no more. Of judgment, because the prince of this world is judged. I have yet many things to say unto you, but ye cannot bear them now. Howbeit, when he, the Spirit of truth, is come, he will guide you into all truth. For he shall not speak of himself, but whatsoever he shall hear, that shall he speak, and he will show you things to come. He shall glorify me, for he shall receive of mine, and shall show it unto you. All things that the Father hath are mine. Therefore said I, that he shall take of mine, and shall show it unto you. A little while, and ye shall not see me. And again a little while, and ye shall see me, because I go to the Father. Then said some of his disciples among themselves, What is this that he saith unto us? A little while, and ye shall not see me, and again a little while, and ye shall see me, and because I go to the Father. They said therefore, What is this that he saith? A little while. We cannot tell what he saith. Now Jesus knew that they were desirous to ask him, and said unto them, Do ye inquire among yourselves of that I said, A little while, and ye shall not see me, and again a little while, and ye shall see me? Verily, verily, I say unto you, that ye shall weep and lament, but the world shall rejoice. And ye shall be sorrowful, but your sorrow shall be turned into joy. A woman, when she is in travail, hath sorrow, because her hour is come. But as soon as she is delivered of the child, she remembereth no more the anguish for joy that a man is born into the world. And ye now therefore have sorrow. I will see you again, and your heart shall rejoice, and your joy no man taketh from you. And in that day ye shall ask me nothing. Verily, verily, I say unto you, whatsoever ye shall ask the Father in my name, he will give it you. Hitherto have ye asked nothing in my name. Ask, and ye shall receive, that your joy may be full. These things have I spoken unto you in Proverbs. But the time cometh when I shall no more speak unto you in Proverbs, but I shall show you plainly of the Father. At that day ye shall ask in my name. And I say not unto you that I will pray the Father for you, for the Father himself loveth you, because ye have loved me, and have believed that I came out from God. I came forth from the Father, and am come into the world. Again I leave the world, and go to the Father. His disciples said unto him, Lo, now speakest thou plainly, and speakest no proverb. Now are we sure that thou knowest all things, and needest not that any man should ask thee. By this we believe that thou camest forth from God. Jesus answered them, Do ye now believe? Behold, the hour cometh, yea, is now come, that ye shall be scattered every man to his own, and shall leave me alone. And yet I am not alone, because the Father is with me. These things I have spoken unto you, that in me ye might have peace. In the world ye shall have tribulation. But be of good cheer. I have overcome the world.
Okay, Jen, do we have any questions or any announcements to be made?
Yes, John, we have an announcement or two, I guess, and some questions tonight.
Okay. What do you got, Jen? Did we lose you? Maybe I got lost. Am I here?
You're here, John. I don't know what happened to Jen.
Jen, we're not getting you if you're talking. Okay, we'll take that after I talk about Jefferson. I've been wanting to talk about Jefferson for a couple of weeks now, and so I'd like to talk a little bit about him and a lot of the. I really get disturbed about the fake news about Jefferson. I've researched a lot in history on Jefferson, and I do know that you know, there are people that have written all kinds of stuff, but there's nothing in history, nothing could be found that's documented concerning the evil that they say about Jefferson, and everything is actually the opposite on Jefferson. If you want to kill America, kill Jefferson. Get rid of Jefferson. Make him a demon, because he's the creator of this whole thing. So, but anyway, let's take a look at Jefferson tonight. And we did do something on. Let me see if I can find that on the education. I think it was under topical. Was it a topical? Let's see. No. Where did I? Oh, educational videos, I think it was. Maybe it's there. I think this was it here. If founding fathers and slavery in America. If anybody hasn't seen this video, it's only about 26 minutes long, so if you haven't seen this video, we did play this live many, many months ago, maybe a year ago. It's been quite some time ago. But really, it digs in deeply on the position of our founding fathers and slavery and on how that slavery was already here. You know, America did not create slavery. America was not created with slavery in mind. Our founding fathers were against slavery. Jefferson was the leader of moving against slavery. Did everything he can trying to emancipate slaves and to stop slavery from being, you know, people from being sold. And he's done a lot of work on that. But he gets no credit. They call him a contradiction. And certainly he is not. It's just that people have written all kinds of books to destroy Jefferson, because if you want to destroy America, destroy Jefferson. So that's what's happening. But in any event, let's go and we're going to take a little bit of a look on Jefferson. I got this information, The Real Thomas Jefferson. That's the name of the book. A great book, and everything is documented. So all the information in this book, we could trace all the way back, and and know we have valid information. You know, I write, when I write, I always write with lots and lots of footnotes. Footnotes is my, it proves the fact. It documents the information that I'm sharing with people, and you could trace it back if you want. But in any event, we're going to look at a few excerpts out of this book. I'm going to try to do this as short as possible. You know, if you want to destroy America, destroy Thomas Jefferson. And that's why he is probably one of the most assaulted of all of our founding fathers. Back in the day, the Federalists, they despised Thomas Jefferson because him and Madison were the key points that prevented them from having a stronger federal government. Although we ended up with a stronger federal government, if we go back to the Constitution and the way this nation was set up and the law, then we would have much stronger states and less, and federal government wouldn't be as powerful as it is. But it seized a lot of power, and it done that because people are ignorant. They don't know the common law. They don't know the Constitution. They don't know our founding fathers. They haven't looked into the Federalist Papers. So we need to really get diligent on understanding, you know, our heritage and looking into these things. But Thomas Jefferson, I've heard everything, and I've done a lot of research on him beyond this book alone, but this book here has a lot of great things in it. But Thomas Jefferson, they say, oh, he's a contradiction. Oh, he had slaves, he bought and sold slaves. Thomas Jefferson never bought a slave in his life and never sold a slave in his life. He refused it. We're going to get into a lot of things that he'd done trying to free the slaves. And remember, it was against the law to emancipate the slaves back in Virginia. I did a thing on slavery and the Founding Fathers, which was mostly about Thomas Jefferson, but others also. They all were one accord. Remember, the United States did not build itself upon slavery. Slavery was here already. Slavery was in the colonies. I'm not sure how far back it goes, but I'm sure it goes back into the 1600s maybe, or the early 1700s. I really don't know. So our founding fathers were born into this under British rule. It was British rule that brought this into the colonies to make money and to destroy ultimately the morals of America, because they didn't want America to be free and independent, of course. That wasn't the case or the focus, but it did become that because of all of the problems we had with Britain. So you want to destroy America? Destroy Thomas Jefferson. And you think we had fake news today? Boy, oh boy, you don't know fake news yet. Well, maybe we all do. Okay, I'm just going to jump into this book in various places to make the points. Again, this is all documented cases. These are facts, all going back into history. I'm not going to do the quotes or anything. If you want to find these quotes and really dig into it, go buy the book, The Real Thomas Jefferson. It's not an expensive book. I think these books cost about $5 or something. If you buy three or four at a time, you get them $5-6 a piece plus delivery. So you go to nccs.net. That's National Centers for Constitutional Studies. Okay, pick up reading here. Few men have come to this position so well qualified as Thomas Jefferson. To catalog the areas of his exploration, wrote historian Julian Boyd, is to list most of the principal categories of knowledge, law, government, history, mathematics, architecture, medicine, agriculture, language, and literature, education, music, philosophy, religion, and almost every branch of the natural sciences, from astronomy through meteorology to zoology. He had already been awarded doctoral degrees by three universities, and he was often spoken of as a walking library. His breadth of learning is illustrated by an antidote involving a highly educated man from New England who chanced to meet Jefferson at a country inn one evening, not knowing who he was. The man repeatedly introduced new topics into the conversation, and he was so astounded at his companion's knowledge that he afterward inwardly inquired of the innkeeper regarding Jefferson's identity. The surprised New Englander later described his impression of the enlightened statesman farmer from Virginia. When he spoke of law, I thought he was a lawyer. When he talked about mechanics, I was sure he was an engineer. When he got into medicine, it was evident that he was a physician. When he discussed theology, I was convinced that he must be a clergyman. And when he talked of literature, I made up my mind that I had run against a college professor who knew everything. As the English novelist Samuel Butler once noted, though God cannot alter the past, historians can. His observation is especially applicable to our changing perceptions of great historical personalities, most of whom are relentlessly reinterpreted by each new generation of biographers. It is doubtful whether many of these renowned characters of yesteryear would ever recognize themselves in some of the publications devoted to them today. There is no better example of this kind of metamorphosis than Thomas Jefferson, author of the American Declaration of Independence, the third president of the United States. Since his death in 1826, he had been alternately vilified and defiled in numerous forms by writers of varying motivations. In fact, so widely has his image fluctuated in the national consciousness over the years that an extensive scholarly study has been conducted to investigate this phenomenon. During the first five decades of this nation's history, Jefferson was preeminent among his peers as an advocate of the rights of man. The inspiring appeal of his philosophy and the eloquent forces of his expressions have made him a powerful symbol of freedom throughout the Western world, and his influences had been ever greater in his death than in life. Because of this tremendous influence, hosts of experts have predictably come forward and altered the Jeffersonian image to accommodate partisan political objectives. Some have chosen to dwell on Jefferson's personal character. He has been variously portrayed as either a scoundrel or a demagogue, depending on the author's purpose. One recent product of the vilification school, for instance, is a popular psychobiography which has now found its way into most American libraries, claiming to be an intimate history of Jefferson's private life. The book focuses largely on his alleged lust for an enchanting slave mistress. It has Jefferson suffering from a near schizophrenic condition as he desperately struggles to conceal his scandalous immorality in order to retain his esteem of the country he loves. As the following pages will demonstrate, this bizarre tale, like so many others about notable figures of the past, bears no resemblance to historical facts. Others have preferred to explore Jefferson's system of ideas on government, economics, education, or some other subject. But whatever side of him is treated, the standard approach among today's writers is to analyze and interpret him for the reader. We are not permitted to look at Jefferson directly, but rather through the eyes of various authors who summarize what he did and paraphrased what he said, and then carefully explain why he did and said those things. Every few years, another author comes along with still one more fresh interpretation. As these pile up one on top of another, the thoughtful reader begins to wonder who in the world Thomas Jefferson really was. This is precisely why The Real Thomas Jefferson, that's this book, has been published. The title may seem presumptuous at first glance, but it is not meant to suggest that those of us who prepared the book are gifted with superior insight. Indeed, we have made a conscious effort to keep ourselves out of the picture by allowing Jefferson to explain his life and ideas in his own words. We have tried to ensure that his spirit, not ours, will breathe into these pages, so that all who read them will become acquainted with Jefferson himself, not another second-hand interpretation of him. For reasons already noted, Jefferson's life and thought have been misinterpreted and misconstrued by Americans of the 20th century. Yet before we can appreciate and utilize his magnificent vision of a free republic, we must correctly understand both his life and his ideas. We hold these truths to be self-evident. Many citizens of the United States have considered it providential that Jefferson was appointed to write the Declaration of Independence. It is safe to say that no other man in the country was so well equipped to do so, both in political philosophy and in literary talent. This is amply demonstrated in the document's now famous opening lines. When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal stations to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind require that they should declare the cause which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such forms as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. As he turned to an explanation of the necessity which had constrained the colonists to alter their former system of government, Jefferson declared, "The history of present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states." Then came a spirited recounting of a long train of abuses and usurpations practiced by George III, after which the Declaration closed with these moving words, "We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, in General Congress, assembled appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do, in the name and by the authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are and of a right ought to be free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connections between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and do all other acts and things which independent states may of a right do. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of the divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortune, and our sacred honor." That happy system of our ancestors. That's the title of this section here we're going to read. Together with Benjamin Franklin and John Adams, Jefferson was appointed to draw up a proposal for the Great Seal of the United States. Although Congress later adopted a simple design, actually it's a New World Order design, Jefferson took the occasion to emphasize the historical influence of two earlier civilizations on the liberties of his countrymen. And by the way, the fact that we see that these symbols within our nation, the seals of our nation, identifies with the New World Order, it already tells us they're gonna try to kill off Jefferson any way they could. I mean, they tried to kill him during the war. They really tried to seek him out. He escaped narrowly, at least on one occasion, maybe more, just by minutes, and he was able to escape the British. But this tells us you got to destroy the philosophy, the morality. You got to destroy the individual in order to destroy America. Kill Jefferson, you kill America. Anyway, let me go back. One side of his proposed seals, just Jefferson, depicted the Anglo-Saxon leaders Hengist and Horace, with the other side portrayed by ancient Israelites being led through the wilderness by God's pillar of fire. Like others of the American founding fathers, Jefferson had studied the various forms of governments which had operated throughout recorded history, along with the Greek democracies, the Roman Republic, and the numerous monarchies, aristocracies, and other political systems of Europe. He had examined with great interest the governmental institutions established by the ancient Israelis and the very similar forms later used among the Anglo-Saxons. In these, he saw the model of free government in his own era. Now that the United States had declared itself an independent nation, the members of Congress were responsible to devise a system of government that would most effectively serve the American people. Jefferson attended the first 2 months of the debate in this great issue. He said very little on the floor of Congress as usual, but there was no question in his mind about the direction that the new national government should take. Has not every restitution of the ancient Saxon laws had happy effects? he asked a friend that summer. It is not better now that we is it not better now that we return at once into that happy system of our ancestors, the wisest and most perfect ever yet devised by the wit of man, as it stood before the 8th century, one of Jefferson's biographers has written of him. Jefferson's great ambition at the time was to promote a renaissance of Anglo-Saxon's primitive institutions on the new continent. Thus presented, the American Revolution was nothing but the reclamation of the Anglo-Saxon birthright of which the colonists had been deprived by a long train of abuses. This is the true foundation of Jefferson's political philosophy. An expression of the American mind. There are some who have attempted to criticize the text of Declaration of Independence on the basis that it's the idea were borrowed from other writers. But Jefferson never claimed otherwise. He readily acknowledged the influence on his own thinking of many theorists he had studied up to that time. The object of the Declaration of Independence, he explained, was not to find out new principles or new arguments never before thought of, not merely to say things which had never been said before, but to place before mankind the common sense of the subject in terms so plain and firm as to command their assent and to justify ourselves in the independent stand we were compelled to take. Neither aiming at originality of principle or sentiment, nor yet copied from any particular and previous writing, it was intended to be an expression of the American mind, and to give to the expression the proper tone and spirit called for by the occasion. All its authority rests, then, on the harmonizing sentiments of the day, whether expressed in conversations, in letters, printed essays, or the elementary books of public right, as Aristotle, Cyril, Locke, Sidney, etc. You know, just make a quick note here, because I'm not sure whether I got this covered in my notes here, but remember, the Anglo-Saxons, the particular focusing back into the 8th century, Jefferson was surprised because he realized that they had known about the Old Testament. They knew about Moses. They knew about the structure of government that the Israelites had. And he marveled over that, and that's where we're really structured about. And that's what he was referring to when he was going back into the 8th century. We may be covering that here, but I don't remember seeing that at the moment. Okay, on other occasions he wrote, whether I had gathered my ideas from reading or reflecting, I do not know. I know only that I turned to neither book nor pamphlet while writing it. I did not consider it as any part of my charge to invent new ideas. But while Jefferson was only one among many writers of his time who believed in the principles contained in the Declaration of Independence, surely no one before him or since has expressed those ideas in such an inspired force and eloquence. For the rest of his life, Jefferson remained deeply grateful for the honor of having written the Declaration of Independence, which he called the Holy Bond of Our Union. Nearly half a century after 1776, he expressed to his old friend James Madison the hope that Americans would always remember the Declaration of and cherish its ideals. And it is an heavenly comfort to see that these principles are yet so strongly felt. I pray God that these principles may be eternal. Now that the United States has declared itself an independent nation, the members of Congress were responsible to devise a system of government that most effectively served the American people. Jefferson attended the first 2 months of the debates on this great issue. He said very little on the floor of Congress, as usual, but there was no question in his mind about the direction that the new national government should take. Has not every restitution of the ancient Saxon laws had happy effects, he asked a friend that summer. I think I just read that. Yeah. Okay. Jefferson on slavery. The first acts of Jefferson's political career, as noted earlier, was an attempt to make it legal for slave owners in Virginia to emancipate their slaves. Now remember, I want to make another point, because I don't think it's covered here, but it did cover in the look at Founding Fathers and Slavery. And that was that Jefferson never bought a slave in his life. He never sold a slave in his life. He inherited all the slaves he had, and he took care of these slaves, and he was concerned about them. But anyway, in Virginia, emancipate the slaves. That bill was rejected, as was the condemnation of slavery in his original draft of the Declaration of Independence. His laborers in this cause finally met with some success in 1778 when he introduced a bill in the Virginia House of Delegates to prevent the further importation of slaves into the state. The purpose was approved, but he recognized that it only stopped the increase of the evil by importation, leaving to further efforts its final eradication. It was Jefferson's desire to open the way for this final eradication, and very next year, when his committee submitted their proposals for the revision of Virginia's legal code, however, he ascertained through conversations with his colleagues that the legislature was not yet prepared to consider such a progressive step, so he calculated another strategy. The bill on the subject of slaves was a mere digest of the existing laws respecting them without any intimation of a plan for a future and general emancipation. It was thought better that this should be kept back and attempted only by way of amendment whenever the bill should be brought on. But when the bill did come up for debate, Jefferson was unable to get his amendment passed. It was found that the public mind would not yet bear proposition, yet the day is not distant when it must bear and adopt it. He wrote, "Or worse will follow. Nothing is more certain written in the book of fate than that these people are to be free." Jefferson would be heard from again on the issue of slavery. The beginning of the two-party system. Jefferson and Hamilton disagreed on other national issues, as well as both foreign and domestic. The opposing views of these two powerful cabinet members, widely publicized and hotly debated in the newspapers throughout the country, eventually became rallying points for the formation of two contending political parties. Members of the Federalist parties were concentrated primarily among the commercial and industrial interests of the northern states. They shared Hamilton's desire for a strong central government backed by a rich and wise and the well-born, and most of them advocated close relations with Great Britain. The Republican Party, on the other hand, largely drew its strength from the agricultural populations of the southern states and the western territories. Like Jefferson, the Republicans favored a limited government with respected states' rights and allowed for broad citizen participation during the European conflicts of the time. They generally sided with France, at least in the early part of the country's revolution. The philosophical differences between the Federalists and the Republicans were destined to exert an immeasurable influence on American policies for many generations. But while Jefferson was Secretary of State, he did not look upon these parties as formal organizations, nor did he yet consider himself a party leader. His only intent was to further the cause of republicanism, spelled with a small r, to protect the Constitution and to prevent the monarchists from consolidating power in the federal government. A season of slander. The Republican administration, despite its popularity with the masses, was subjected to a steady barrage of criticism by the Federalists pressed through Al Jefferson's two terms. Now, I want to make a note here. You got to understand that the Federalist was being pushed along by the enemy, by the New World Order. It was back in those days. Britain was behind the whole thing. Hamilton was pushing forward. He had a very strong relationship with the bankers, and he wanted a national bank, and he eventually got that, and we know how that went in history. And then we came back to it again, and it just destroyed us. Jefferson was against all those things. let's see. A barrage of criticisms by the Federalists pressed throughout Jefferson's two terms. The vilest attacks on the president himself, however, came from an unexpected source. Calendar's calamities. One of the victims of the Seditious Act, who was pardoned by President Jefferson in 1801, was James Thompson Calendar, a Republican journalist who had been a relentlessly critic of the Federalists during the last presidential campaign. But Calandra wanted more than a pardon. Later that year, he plainly told James Madison, the new Secretary of State, that he hoped to be appointed postmaster in Richmond, Virginia. When it became clear that he was not going to be offered any governmental post, the embittered Calandra sought revenge by going to work for the Federalist newspaper in Richmond. In March 1802, he began publishing various charges against Republican leaders in Congress and certain members of the cabinet. By autumn, he was trained his guns. Training his guns on the president. Calandra was has been described as the most unscrupulous scandal monger of the day, a journalist who stopped at nothing. Well, that sounds familiar, huh? In March 1802, he began publishing various charges against Republican leaders in Congress and certain members of the cabinet. By autumn, he was training his guns on the president. Calandra has been described as the most unscrupulous. I know I read part of this, but I got interrupted by a phone call. He was described as the most unscrupulous scandal-monger of the day, a journalist who stopped at nothing and stooped at anything. He was not an investigative journalist. He never bothered to investigate anything. For him, the story, especially if it reeked of scandal, was everything, everything. Truth, if it stood in his way, was summarily mowed down. True to his style, he fabricated a series of scandalous stories about Jefferson's personal life, the ugliest of which charged him of having fathered several children by a mulatto slave at Monticello, a young woman named Sally Hemings. Although Calandra had never gone near Jefferson's estate, he alleged that this was a common knowledge in the neighboring area. He concluded many lurid details of this supposed illicit relationship among the entertaining facts he created for his readers, even inventing the names of children who Dusky Sally had never born. Other Federalists editors took up the accusations with glee, and Calandra's stories spread like wildfire from one end of the country to the other, sometimes expanded and embellished by the subsequent writers. The president was charged with other evils as well. The torrent of slander never seemed to let up. As one biographer has written, he suffered open personal attacks, which in severity and obscenity had rarely, if ever, been matched in presidential history in the United States. Like other men, Jefferson was sensitive to these false accusations. Years earlier, he had written, "My great wish is to go on in a strict but silent performance of my duty, to avoid attracting notice, and to keep my name out of the newspapers, because I find the pain of a little censure, even when it is unfounded, is more acute than the pleasure of much praise." Even before entering the presidency, he felt he was being used as the property of the newspaper, a fair mark for every man's dirt. And now that he was subjected almost daily to fresh doses of venom from Federalist penmen, he sorely lamented the malignant perversions of those who made every word from me a text for a new misrepresentation and calamities. Publicly, however, he made no response to these unscrupulous attacks. "I should have fancied myself half guilty," he said, "had I condensed to put pen to paper in refutable of these falsehoods, or draw to them respect by any notice from myself." Nor did he use the channels of civil authority to silence his accusers. True to the declaration he had made in his inaugural address and elsewhere, he defended his countrymen's right to be a free press. The Baron Alexander von Humboldt, a famous German explorer and scientist, learned the depth of Jefferson's commitment to this principle when he visited the city of Washington in the summer of 1804. Calling at the executive mansion one morning, Humboldt was invited to meet with the president in the cabinet room. As he sat by a table among the newspapers that were scattered about, he perceived one that was already filled with most virulent abuse of Mr. Jefferson's calamities, the most offensive personal as well as political. "Why are these liberals allowed," asked the Baron, taking up the paper. Why is not this libelous journal suppressed, or its editor at least fined and imprisoned? Mr. Jefferson smiled, saying, "Put that paper in your pocket, Baron, and should you hear the reality of our liberty or the freedom of our press question in Europe, show this paper and tell them where you found it." Jefferson's grandson, Thomas Jefferson Randolph, described the calm perspective with which the president viewed these slanders. In speaking of the calamities which his enemies had uttered against his public and private character with such unmitigated and untiring bitterness, he said that he had not considered them as abusing him. They had never known him. They had created an imaginary being clothed with odious attributes to whom they had given his name, and it was against that creature of their imagination they had leveled their antimass. Not only did Jefferson remain silent about the sensational accusations of James Callender and like-minded.
Hey, John, are you there? We're not hearing you if you are. I'm looking. We totally lost John. He is off of the call. You ought to give him a call, Jan. Or go into the questions or read whatever. We have lost John. Gerard, you want to take over? Can anybody hear me?
Testing, 1, 2, 3. Can you hear me now, Terry?
Yes, I can.
Okay, that's amazing.
I don't know where to go from here. Is Gerard around? Gerard, are you there?
Yes, he is. He's unmuted. Where are you, Gerard?
I'm here. I had to go out and come back in. You couldn't hear me, apparently.
Yeah, we can't hear John either. He's gone.
It's a conspiracy.
I think Thomas Jefferson got him.
Yeah.
He's out to lunch.
One of the Thomas Jefferson's haters got him.
Yeah, exactly.
Hang on. Where's
one of those Federalists.
Do we have any questions that were sent in to you?
Yeah, we do.
Are there any
I'm
good
wondering,
ones?
we also have someone who'd like to speak tonight, who is the chairman of the COS committee in Allegheny County, Pennsylvania. His name is Brian.
Okay.
He has experience in some ideas that might help make the COS self-sufficient. And maybe those ideas could be used throughout the nation as well as locally. Let's see if I can find him on the list here. He was here a minute ago, and now he appears to be gone.
Oh, boy.
Hold on a sec. I'll see if I can locate him.
Yeah, because...
I think I got him. Brian, Brian, is that you?
Yes.
You the Brian we're
yes.
talking about?
Yes, yes. Thank you.
Okay, he's on...
Yeah, I just keep getting bounced off. So, I've been working in this arena for quite some time, and a lot of the knowledge that we need to move into a point where we apply it ourselves. There's much more of us than there is of them. That's kind of a broad statement, but. The main thing is I'm a committeeman in my district and have been for quite some time. Worked with several people that teach others on what a committee person is, and never thought about running for office. I just felt that we as a person have more power than anyone basically in politics, and with a two-party system, especially in our state. And a closed primary, it's pretty hard to exercise a lot of these elements. It seems like every state that seems to have election issues is one of the states that have closed primaries. We've been talking about, can you hear me okay?
Yep, go ahead, you're coming through.
We're talking with several people in my area that were in office and ran unopposed, and basically no one's even stepping up to the plate. And a lot of times it kind of comes down to a money issue, the availability of it. And I've been working on doing basically a crowdfund type setup, quite different from what anyone is used to or is aware of on this call, to be able to raise money for people that want to fill positions, or at least, you know, have more than one person running in each party, and maybe an independent could stand a chance if they kind of relate to George Washington's dislike for the parties beyond me, we the people, especially whenever there's really not much fairness in a one- or two-party vote. And that's one of the reasons why he didn't care much for the parties. And I think that's a big issue that we do have. As a matter of fact, in Pennsylvania, there's more independents registered than there are in either one of the two parties. And it seems like if you read... The description for both the Republicans and Democrats without a label on it, it would be very hard to tell which one is which. I grew up as a Kennedy Democrat and was in the military and was able to vote how I wanted to without being affiliated to either one of the parties until I came back here to PA and decided to become a committeeman because of the grasp that certain party has on our big cities here. And I think that we need to take a 180-degree different approach and an approach that's more in line with Jefferson and a lot of these folks, but without the without the labels and the taking of sides, because I think that most of us are just left, right, or center. Depending on if you are a believer, you're definitely going to side with God first and His commandments. We're in a process of doing some co-ops to kind of fall in line with the Committee of Safety or Inspection, so that way we can engage people, you know, in the committee establishment, so that way we're not just supporting and getting the ones that they choose elected. We're actually able to go out there and seek out and vet potential candidates and also support and get them elected. I'm not your typical person whenever it comes to this kind of stuff. I just see what's happening or not happening, and we're kind of reaching a point, a fork in the road, where we have to really move into an action mode, I believe, with everything that's going to be hitting us, you know, this fall. It may be just another distraction. But anyhow, I appreciate the time. There's a lot to talk about, but I'm more into the action mode. I guess the Jefferson mode. I'm more of a doer, because a lot of the stuff that we're talking about, I was engaged with from the time I was 5 years old.
That National Liberty Alliance started out as New York committee man, right?
Actually, Bob Schultz, I did some work with him, and he was the first one that actually turned me on to this organization. I think that I had joined it, I don't know, probably a dozen years ago, maybe, maybe not that long, but...
Could have been.
I don't know, familiar with Bob Schultz?
Yeah, we've done a lot of stuff with Bob.
Yeah, I worked with him and Judy, and there was like four or five of us trying to help him redo the website and everything, and I actually still have the site saved that I was working on to accommodate the entire United States and also each state and the counties in each state to seek out potential leaders help fund them and different things with things that will actually save people money, promote and support local businesses, and all, of course, at the same time, help fund charities. So my background is really diverse. I'm very much engaged in a lot of aspects of this stuff because, you know, a lot of things work theoretically, and that's kind of where it begins and unfortunately where it ends. So but I'd like to become a part of helping not only this organization but anybody that's walking paths that are parallel, because I think we need to do more to complement each other's efforts instead of looking at this as a competition.
Absolutely, yeah. So that's good, and you are a committeeman right now. Yes.
I am in District 10 here in Pennsylvania.
Right. So, and they actually let you vet the candidates?
Well, I do on my own, truthfully. They don't have any say as to what I do and what I don't. As a matter of fact, I have supported, you know, I'm more into the person and what they've done instead of what they say they can do or claim they can do. To me, whenever they make promises, they're basically entering into a verbal contract. So I do believe that you should be able to hold these people accountable whenever they basically lie and they laugh at you.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, my brother's very active in California, and that's what they've done. They actually went through the courts and served their elected officials with I'm not really sure of what it is, but there's an organization that I was thinking about aligning with called represent.us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they were doing, was formally serving the elected officials with court documents.
That's smart. And, you know, what we did was we put application in as committeemen, not members of the county committee, which they changed it to, which is an Orwellian term that basically means you're appointed, you're not elected. See, that's the fraud. And we actually sued them for that. We took the New York State Board of Elections to court. But, of course, they couldn't get their heads around that because they're so stuck in what they've been doing, you know. But we
It's intentional.
Absolutely. Some of it is and some of it isn't. But, you know what I mean? They reinforce, you know, they reinforce the ones that aren't. But ultimately, we went ahead and vetted candidates, and they came. These candidates came and saw us because on a local level, when you got 200 or 300 people in a room in a local area, that's a lot of votes, and they don't want to give them up. And so they did. They did. We got credibility because we sent letters to these guys who say, you know, we are New York committeemen such and such, and we had two counties that we drew together. You know, actually it was more than two counties. But anyway, we called it Hudson Valley, committeeman or whatever. And we had some of the ones that were running for Congress come to us and sit with us for a couple hours while we wadded them. And so you just got to go out and do it. They can't stop you. Like you said, they don't really have control over you. And especially if you put in the proper title, which is committeeman, never mind member of the county committee, committeeman. And they accepted it. They didn't know any better. They accepted it. What are they going to say? It's not committeeman? You know, I mean, they want you to say you're a member of the county committee because that makes you appointed by the county chair. And so technically you don't have a right to vote. But, you know,
I just want to let you know I'm back. I've been listening here to, was that Brian, I think it was, talking?
Yeah.
Yes.
So I understand you're actually a committeeman in Pennsylvania, and you went through the process and working. Are you familiar with what we're doing with the committeeman process?
I'm really not up to date on this. As I said, I had worked with Bob Schultz, and he was the first one that introduced me to the NLA, and I joined, I don't know, it was probably a good dozen or better years ago, and we were kind of helping him draft a new website to add not only the states, but each county in the state, so we can find leaders in each county and let them kind of build, you know, a group of folks that were of like mind, so that way we can...
We need to make a connection. I know Robert Schultz, we met with him not long ago, and few other people. We had the Republic Review, GR from the Republic Review, and of course we were there and trying to work together as a group. We were trying to get the sheriffs on board with Sheriff Mack, but he didn't show up. And we should connect on that. What we're doing is, well, how long has it been since you've been listening in on where we're at and what we're doing lately? In the past,
I just dialed in for the first time this evening. Rosalind, I'm the co-chair on the Allegheny County Committee of Safety. And
okay, so you're familiar with what we're doing on the Committees of Safety, trying to energize you. But you're also an elected committee man with the political process through the statutory process?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Have you read through our book yet? Because we have two books out there. One is the Committee of Safety Committeeman, which is the General Assembly, which is everyone. You know, everyone's a committeeman ultimately within that Committee of Safety. And then, of course, there's the subcommittees, which we put together, the Committee of Correspondence, Committee of Education, Political Committee, Judicial Committee, and numerous other committees. But I don't know if you've had a chance to read through the Committee of Safety Committeeman book yet.
I haven't. I am strictly in an action mode. I believe that knowledge without applying it is really at this point and juncture in our country's current status. We don't have much time. We've got to become very active, and that remnant needs to do. I mean, we know what's right and what's wrong, and it's a lot of it is common sense and, you know, with God's laws and Phoenician law and those things that are that were used to put, you know, our documents together. That's the mode that I'm in. I'm very, very active in putting my finger on the pulse myself and keeping it there. But you
understand the committeeman process as it exists within the political system that is out there with the two-party system. You're familiar with the different subdivisions the electrical election districts into the congressional districts and how they meet.
I am, and that's part of why. Quick interjection here. In 2016, my wife and I were voting at separate machines, but beside each other, and she asked me for help. And of course, they wouldn't let me help her, and of course, they couldn't help her. And I discovered that the Republican Party box was checked, and so was the box for president, which was Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. I couldn't find remedy for that, so after a few minutes that I went to my machine, it was the same way.
Mm-hmm.
I knew right then and there that we had an issue, and it wasn't a Democrat issue or Republican issue. It was an issue with both, because, mm-hmm. you know, and because the few that are good are far outnumbered by the ones that are not, so it's hard to have a Democratic element, which is a small part of what our republic represents. And to be fair, I have served as a chamber president, and I seem to have a lot of issues with elected officials from bottom to top. It seems like it's always the same. And the only ones that seem to suffer in the process are our children and our elderly. And that's why I'm in more of an action mode, because we need to do things with the tools that we have without having to be a certain person in a certain position with a certain piece of paper.
Go ahead.
And we really need to move on that. It's, you know, sometimes you can try to be as diplomatic as you can and be as thoughtful as you can, and sometimes you have to. I mean, even Jesus flipped a few tables in his day to get attention. And sometimes you've got to do what you got to do. I mean, we are anointed.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you a question. Are you interested or willing to work with us on a national level?
I am. The way I work is I'm not into the competitive nature of things. I'm more into finding ways that I can complement and help and hopefully create, you know, a condition that further spurs that kind of thing on. Let me tell you
what we've done and what we're trying to get to, and I know you're somewhat familiar because you're working in the Committee of Safety, which is the true committee, man, unelected. You don't have to be elected, and we have more power and authority than anyone else that is a quote-unquote a statutory committee, man. And we're not limited to, for instance, my county has 249 committeemen in each party, and because there's 249 election districts within my county. And with that being said and done, we're not limited to 249 people. We can have 2,049 people. It doesn't matter. Many hands make light work, so the more people, the merrier. We have a lot of work to do. We got to work on our educational problems within our own counties. Our schools are a wreck and a mess. We have to work on our judicial process problems. We have to take back the courts. We have to take back the political process. The committeeman process has a high attrition rate because eventually people figure out they're just being used as suckers to walk papers and just get the status quo reestablished, whether it's the criminal on the right or the criminal on the left. It's both the same. Every once in a while, a good person gets in there, like Trump and others, Ron Paul and his son and so on. But what one of the things that we need help with or assistance with, because I can't do this. I mean, I put together the book to try to describe to people on the committee of safety level, and I don't think many people have gotten to this point yet because they're too busy structuring things. But at some point, and they're acting as a committee, as a full committee, and they have all these subcommittees come reporting to the main committee, and then the main committee gets active. Everybody gets active in subcommittees working to do something throughout the month, mm-hmm. 2 or 3 hours on this or that, whatever. And whether it's educational or political or judicial or whatever the case may be. But what we have to do is we have to train people to understand how the committees come together, how the committeemen come together and form. You have the assembly district, you have maybe a congressional district, you have a senatorial district on a state level, you have the assembly districts on the state level, you have, and then of course, well, the senators that we need to return back and get rid of the 17th Amendment, that doesn't really exist anyway, because it never really went through the whole process. But nevertheless, it's null and void because it's repugnant to the Constitution, because it destroys the balance of power. And the states lost their sovereignty because they have no say in what goes on in Washington, because they don't control the senators. The states were supposed to control the senators, and the people control, you know, the representatives. But anyway, what we're doing is, I'd like to do, if you're interested, is get together with you and talk about this book that we had put together, which is about the committeeman process within the Committee of Safety, and breaks up all of the different political subdivisions. And we need somebody that can address those problems with the different committees of safety and assist them in explaining different things. Maybe we'll create, I think we need to create some PowerPoints. I mean, I could put some PowerPoints together. I don't know if you have that ability. And then we can create the PowerPoint videos out of them. But if you're interested in working with us on that and kind of dig in on that particular thing, we don't have anyone that could represent us with that to, you know, assist the people on how to do these things.
Absolutely. I can give you my contact information. I don't care.
Well, I see your phone number out there right now. It's a 724 number.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. And your name is Brian. What I'll do is I'll try to give you a call tomorrow, the next day, and let me write this number down before I lose you. 172. Okay, and I'll give you a call maybe tomorrow just to kind of have a little bit of a conversation. But I'd like to get into an in-depth conversation after we have a little bit of a meeting, and maybe you've read through the book we put together called. You can find it under Start a Committee of Safety, and you come down to the handbooks. And with the handbooks, it's right underneath, I think, you got the the Committeeman Handbook. The Committee of Safety Committeeman Handbook is the second one. And let me share the screen. Do you have the screen, Gerard, or can I take
don't.
It?
I just dialed in.
Oh, you just dialed in. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll share the screen anyway as I'm talking. But basically, there is a book out there that we wrote. It's 42 pages. I'm in the process of updating all these books. It's going to take me about 10 days to update all the books. I've got about 10 books to update. Well, some of them I haven't never even put up there yet. But I got about 10 books, and the ones that are up there is probably about 4 or 5 books, and I'm updating them all right now. And every once in a while, you know, we got to go in, we find correction, and we have to make changes. Or we take a different direction on different things, like we were looking at using Meetup, and Meetup has become the enemy, it's a problem, and we're kind of canning that idea of using Meetup as a connection. And Meetup, I think, will really be a distraction, because it becomes, people get too involved as a social media type thing, and you kind of lose track of what you're doing. It's better off just going to your meeting once a month, maybe getting an email from the organizers telling you what went down and when the next meeting is and so on and so forth, and then get together and actually do business, and then throughout the month, you know, you do your business that you have to do. Depending on what kind of a committee that you're sitting on within the big committee. But the County Committee of Safety Committeeman book is, if you can get download that, it's a PDF, download that and go through it, and maybe you can find some corrections in here. I'm going to be going through it again, like I said, and maybe you can find things that are missing. But we do need someone who is expert in it. One of the things I discovered is that if you drop your party, and we all should drop our parties. I know a lot of people are going to be, I don't want to do that because I want to vote for Trump. And I mean, I'm going to vote for Trump too. You can't vote necessarily in the primaries if you drop your party. But that needs to change, and maybe we will get that changed, because I don't know why they make, well, I know why they make the restriction. They don't want those crossovers. There are some states where you can go in, especially up in the north and northeast here. There's a few states, I think Massachusetts is one of them, and Maine and a few others, I think. There's a couple of them. but where they actually, it doesn't matter what party you're in, you can get in and vote in a primary, you can get involved with it. And that's the way it should be. But if
absolutely. As a matter of fact, a lot of folks don't realize that Ronald Reagan was a Democrat,
that's right,
a big part
yeah.
of his life. So was Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And so who knows
said,
what JFK would be
said,
at this point. He spoke more like a Republican then.
Well, he said, I didn't leave the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party left me.
Absolutely.
But you know what? What is true on the higher end, on the high end of the Democratic Party, the people in Washington and all those people and all the party bosses and everything, look at their whole thing ultimately is bring us into a democracy, and people believe that we're a democracy. I mean, I've even seen Supreme Court justices. I cannot believe it that they called us a democracy, and nothing could be further from the truth. But we
yeah, I really don't believe that it has much to do with many of the people that we know. I do believe that it stems from the less than 3% controlling 97%
absolutely.
Of the planet's wealth is where the problem exists. And the good thing is there's more of us than there is of them, their cohorts, cronies, and ilk combined.
Okay.
We could fix this pretty easily. I believe that if we did this right, that we could actually have enough write-ins come the general election that we can just surprise the white and black hats.
Well, absolutely. We don't want to push away Democrats. We've been working with Democrats here in New York and even in National Liberty Alliance. We don't care what party you belong to. Anybody who wants to reinstate the Constitution is the key that brings
yes.
us together. You know,
eliminate the labels and everything
right.
that's attached to it, because they keep changing the meaning of words pretty much at their whim.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, George Washington, at least two-thirds roughly of his farewell address talked about the damages that the political parties were doing and would continue
absolutely.
To do now and destroy this nation, and they have,
mm-hmm.
and Jefferson was sick of it himself. We were just looking a little bit at that when I got the blue screen of death, but I'm back. But,
so,
you know, getting
so
back,
all we've got to do is activate We the People.
Absolutely.
Really?
That's what the Committee of Safety is all about. We're going to get rid of parties. I do believe absolutely any county that executes a Committee of Safety successfully and gets involved and goes through the process to start taking control of the political process and the judicial process from the point of view of We the People, just the power of We the People to have government by consent and in dealing with our education and other things, the committee man in that county will just fall apart, because they're destroyed by attrition to begin with. They're constantly losing people, always looking for more people to pull in, and when they discover when the committee men that are in there discover that there's a Committee of Safety and understand exactly what we're doing here, I do believe that most of them will come over and work with us, because we'll be doing the same thing they're doing during the political times when the elections are around, and that is putting people into office, walking their papers. What I did discover is there is a form, and it's out there. It's a matter of fact, we have it up on our website. There is a form if you're a non-party member. If you do not belong to any party, okay, you can walk anyone's papers. You can walk a Democrat's paper, you can walk a Republican's paper, anybody, okay? So that's key. That's the big power of leaving your party, becoming a non-party member at all, just being registered to vote, and then being able to walk anyone's papers. The other way you can get around it is if you're a Republican and you don't want to leave the party and you want to be able to walk just anyone's papers, that's good, whether it's a Democrat or whoever's running for office, if they're a good person, you want to walk their papers. The only other way you could do that is if you're a notary. So you can become a notary. That's another way to do it. But I do believe we have to bring this nation back to where it belongs. We have to get rid of political parties. And people may say that's impossible, but I am absolutely convinced if the people do what has to be done, it's just going to happen on its own. We're not going to have to do very much.
Those primaries are funded by taxpayers, and
mm-hmm.
that in itself is unlawful.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The thing of it is, and that's the thing, nobody wants to attack the constitutionality, because if anything has any component that is unconstitutional in nature, even in the slightest, that is null and void in its entirety. You can't fix something that's already broke.
Right.
So
it's not worth fixing anyway, because it's broken from day one. It's just a broken system, no matter what you do with it. We were never meant to be a two-party, three-party, five-party, ten-party, or any party system at all.
We have 14? We have 14 registered parties.
Well, I believe committees of safety, just by their presence and their power and authority as they start to execute and exercise their right to have government by consent and actually bringing their local governments, their state governments, and federal governments back under control as we work together across this nation, there's no doubt in my mind, no doubt, that parties will fall away. People say it's impossible to get rid of them. But this can get rid of them.
They're both pretty much in the same boat right now. One a little worse than the other, but they're on a DNR path.
Mm-hmm.
That's Democrat nor Republican. It goes along with DNR, do not resuscitate.
Right.
But I think that if we can't, we need to have a presence in the electoral process if at all. For this general election.
Well, therein is the Committee of Safety. The biggest problem in America, the organization that destroys more of our republic than anything else out there. Matter of fact, they've literally destroyed a republic. It's still there, but they've taken control and they've manipulated and they've convinced people that we're something else that we're not, and people believe it. We have to bring that back, and only education can bring that back. But the organization that needs to be shut down as soon as possible, once we get onto the other side of devolution, we're planning a front attack on this thing, and that is the Bar Association. They are guilty of treason.
They're a foreign entity. Absolutely. I started out in law, and whenever I realized that my oath was to a foreign entity, being in the military at the time, my oath was to support and defend the Constitution. And
when you say you started out in law, what did you mean by that?
I was actually wanting to become an attorney.
So you have a background in how the judicial process works to some degree?
Well,
how far did you go?
I really didn't bother with it, because how can you have an oath to a foreign entity? Because that's right. what the bar is, and then is to the court. Most of our courts aren't even common law courts, unless you're in Pennsylvania. It's the Court of Common Pleas. That's the closest thing you'll find to that. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know your client, if there's enough money and or notoriety in that case. I mean, it's a farce. It's actually it has nothing to do with anything that's lawful. It's all Roman law.
Do you still have that interest?
Oh yeah, I think I think the best place for people to be, especially attorneys, is to move into constitutional law. Absolutely.
All right, well, I just finished writing a book. I don't know if you've heard. I don't know if you've been to. Well, I think you mentioned you hadn't been to a meeting. You know, the name of the book is Court Access and the Common Law. It's, and I was going to talk about it a little bit anyway tonight, and it's 548 pages. It's a hardcover book. It's only $55. I'm going to get you a copy as soon as I can get some copies, author's copies, which might take a month or so or a couple of weeks. But I'm going to get some author's copies, and I'm going to mail you a copy. And basically, it covers everything, the essentials. I'm just going to look through this real quick. I'm scrolling through what's in this book. Chapter 1 is the essentials, and we cover rudimentary precepts, footnotes, in pro per, license. You don't have to be a licensed attorney. If you go into the civil law court, you have to be a licensed attorney because they set it up that way, and they play that game, but you can beat it up by standing on the principle of next friend under the federal because there's some legislation on that. But taking it back into the proper jurisdiction, which is the common law, is the key, which is the big problem, but can be done, but rarely successful. But once we get to the other side of devolution, it will be the only way to get in. We have to first destroy the Bar Association and go after them, because we've already listed out probably 50 things that they have done, and there's a lot more than that, since the inception of the bar in 1750 here in the colonies, well before we even were the United States of America. The king already had his minions of the New World Order working in America to destroy our judicial system, to get rid of the common law that was already being degraded already in Britain. And he was
especially in 1871, whenever they pretty much just made it a corporation.
Right. That's the Organic Act of 1871. And then the big one is the Rules Enabling Act.
Exactly. And a lot of folks don't realize, but, you know, we experienced our third and final bankruptcy in 1999. And there were, you know, someone that captured the patent on the flag. I mean, there's a lot of things.
And all of that is a fraud. And all of that is really on them. And all of that, we really don't care. And I know that Trump doesn't care. And that thing's just going to fall aside. And we're going to take all their money and give it back to the people. But anyway,
the thing of it is, you know, the problem and the reason why things like this exist is because we just let these people do what they wanted to do. You know, we're tolerant to a fault, but we're as responsible for where we're at right now as anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And,
absolutely.
And no one person, you can't put your faith and trust in any one of flesh. That's
absolutely
why we need to become vigilant and remain vigilant.
Trump has to do his job, and others have to do their job, and we the people have to do our job.
Exactly.
And we the people have to take back what they're offering to give us back.
Well, they serve at our pleasure.
Absolutely. But
and
whatever
we need to remind them of that.
Whatever they don't realize that they need to give back, we'll let them know what it is, because we need to take back the whole enchilada. We don't want part of it. We want all of it. We need to become a true common law republic again. The courts need to become back, open their doors to the common law, to get rid of this civil law, Babylonian law, Justinian law, whatever you want to call it. I mean, lawyers call it Roman law. I mean, that's how far off base they are. But anyway, I'll get you a copy of this book, and I'd like to talk to you about it.
Yeah, we definitely need to approach this from a very local level, because we can get more things done. We can have more help in that process, and it is a bottom up.
Mm-hmm.
Even if we have to start paying our taxes to the local level and then pass it up accordingly, however we see fit as these United States
mm-hmm.
of America.
Well, all we have to do is enforce the Constitution, enforce the people's authorities and their jurisdictions and what authorities they have within those jurisdictions, and not allow them to go beyond that. And the only way we could do that is by having a knowledge of how this system works, what powers and authorities they've been given when an elected individual, and what we expect of them and what they can do, and anything that we have enlisted what they can do, particularly the biggest one, of course, is the legislators, because they're the ones that do most of the damage and set the stage. And so it's the 18 powers in Article 1.
You mean the barristers for the money masters?
Yeah, exactly, we need to get together and talk. I don't want to spend too much time tonight because, you know, we want to get to other people. But I'm going to give you a call tomorrow or the next day. And are you around during the day?
You can reach out to me.
I'm
always in a busy mode trying to work through these details on a regular basis. But I will tell you that we have a holiday coming up,
right.
The 4th of July, that a lot of people don't realize what those folks went through that were a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were beat up pretty bad. I mean,
absolutely.
For doing what they did. And we need to let people know, you know, what we're celebrating and how it took, you know, how long it took for us to get to this point in this celebration.
Mm-hmm.
And what
people had to give up. Absolutely.
So,
are you self-employed? Or is your time your own that you can fit things in, or do you have to be?
I am self-employed, yes.
Okay, so I can call you during the day, and maybe you can talk, or maybe we can't at the time I call you, right?
The best thing to do is to send me a text.
Send you a text?
Yes.
Okay.
Please.
I'll pop you a text and see if you're available, and maybe we can figure out a time. I want to talk to you particularly about the committeemen. Let's talk after the holiday. Why don't we do that? That'll
All
give
right.
you time to digest that book, that handbook we've got, and keep some notes if you think there are any corrections need to be made in that thing or anything that needs to be added to it. I'm going to be doing the same thing now and over the holidays to get that book, you know, refreshed and back up again. And and then we'll get together, let's say, next Tuesday or Wednesday. When is the 4th? Fourth is coming up on
Monday.
Monday? Okay. Yeah. Well, we will be here on Monday, so just to let everyone know, we will have an open forum on Monday. I don't know, maybe I'll pick back up on Jefferson again and finish that off. Maybe I'll restart the whole thing. I don't know, but we'll see what we'll do with that.
Sorry to take up so much time.
This was a very good call. It was very informative. I think other people learned from it also, and it's what we need to do. This is the things we need to be talking about. These are the things we need to be doing. And anyone here that's on the call that is not aware of our meeting with national leaders, we had a national leadership meeting at 7:30 today, and we're going to have another one at 11 o'clock, right after our open forum here. This room's going to close down and reopen up for those who couldn't make it at the 7:30 meeting. Anybody interested in becoming a national leader with National Liberty Alliance, we have numerous positions that we're trying to fill. And the key focus of what we're doing will be explained at that meeting. And if you're not sure whether you want to get involved or not, come to the meeting at 11 o'clock tonight, right after this meeting, and listen in, and then you can make a decision if you want to get involved. And if you have some time, and we're not asking for a lot of time, maybe a couple hours a month. You know, I don't think people have to spend any more than 2, 3, 4 hours a month. A lot more if they want to, of course. People who are retired have the ability to do that. People who are, you know, entrepreneurs and working for themselves often can put more time in and do things. So anybody interested in that, when this room closed down, it's going to reopen back up, be at the meeting tonight, and it'll be an hour or less. So, any final words, Brian, before we let you go and push things back over to Gerard to take the next call?
No, I thank you very much for your time, and look forward to speaking and doing more.
Yep. Okay, Gerard, you want to take things back? I don't see Jan here. I don't see Brent here tonight.
No, I don't either.
Yeah. Well, while we're waiting for Gerard to come back, do we need to get any questions or anything? Get back to that. We never did get to them, did we?
We have questions. Can you hear me okay now?
I can hear you.
Okay.
I'm getting feedback. Someone's mic is open. But go ahead.
I started telling people about the Red Pill Expo that's going on July 9th in Indianapolis, Indiana. They have a really great list of speakers like David Martin and Brian Artis and Del Bigtree and so on. If you go to the URL, just type in redpilluniversity.org with a / Expo dash homepage, and you can get all of the information. If you want, if you can't afford to go, I think the fee is $205 for the whole conference. And if you just want to have access to all of the programs for, I think it's 3 months, it costs $40. So that's a cheap way to get all of that information. You get it real time, and you can play it back over a 3 month period. Now, we did have, or do have, two questions for the evening.
Okay.
The first one says, this is a fairly long one, it's apparent that the red flag gun legislation was just signed into law. How should we be concerning this? How will it be enforced? It appears to negate due process of law, and if someone becomes subject to this legislation, how can they repossess their confiscated guns? The last time I checked, the Second Amendment is an unalienable right that cannot be negated. And I don't see anywhere in the Second Amendment that states persons with legal disabilities, which he calls felony convictions, are even prohibited from bearing arms. Are they too born with these same rights? It appears that our rights have been relegated into privileges. what might the NRA, or he might mean NLA, I'm not sure, either one would be, have something to say.
Yeah, we should try to contact the NRA and try to connect with them, but go ahead.
So was
that the end?
What might the NRA say about this?
Okay, well, I can't speak for the NRA, but they probably meant NLA. I downloaded the actual decision. Thomas, I believe, wrote the decision on that. I haven't read through it yet. I'll be reading through it and taking notes on it and seeing exactly, you know, what it says and how we may proceed. Well, I'll do a paper on this to kind of give the nuts and bolts of what that paper actually talks about and what it says. I mean, we have a lot of other Supreme Court rulings and a lot of things that we can use concerning the fact that we have a right to bear arms. But what I would do, and what I'm going to do myself personally, okay, once I come to an understanding of this, I'm going to go down and see my sheriff and talk to him about this and go through it with him and make sure we're all on the same page on this and how this works and see what he gets out of this. But if you're going to be visiting another state, it might be wise to call the county sheriff of the county of wherever it is you're going to be going to visit and get the sheriff or someone on the phone to talk to him about this and make sure you understand what their thinking is. You know, there is a group working with the sheriffs. There's numerous groups working with the sheriffs, but I heard, of course, there's a group working with the sheriffs that's contacting all of them. I haven't got a contact information on them yet, but I definitely want to connect with them and maybe get the paper I can write up, maybe get the paper out to that. We do have all the fax numbers, and maybe I'll reset the fax machines up. We had 10 fax machines running 24/7 here to sheriffs and other people in government, and maybe we'll get back to that and start sending out faxes. I do have most of their emails, so maybe I can do some large emails and send out the nuts and bolts of what that paper actually said and what is required of the sheriff to do in order to protect the people's unalienable rights, be able to have the right to bear arms and to be able to have a weapon as you travel through the states concealed.
You know,
yeah.
Are you talking about the Supreme Court decision, or are you talking about the red flag gun legislation?
The Supreme Court decision that came out just a couple of days ago.
This is about the red flag gun legislation.
I'm not familiar with that. What is that?
Well, it was passed by the Democrats and the RINOs to make it able to take and seize people's guns without any due process and that sort of thing.
Well, I wouldn't worry about that at all because the Supreme Court ruling just negated that whole thing.
Well,
and there's a whole bunch of other things.
Did it?
Look at, well, absolutely it did. I like I said, I haven't read through it, but from what has been interpreted to me, because I keep hearing everybody talk about this, and I hear news people talk about it, people who are on the internet doing blogs talking about it, but they're paraphrasing and giving their thinking. We need to get down to the nuts and bolts that's in that paper and what actually it means, and then contact our sheriffs concerning that to make sure that they understand it properly also, and that they're out there to protect us against these crazy people. But it's not good. That legislation's not going to go anywhere. I know I get back to this over and over again, but it is what it is. It's the reality of today, and that is devolution. Once we get to the other side of devolution, everything they're doing is going to be null and void. It all as if it never happened because it's going to take time, but the bottom line is it's all unlawful, and that's the point to what's going on with devolution. It's all unlawful. This guy's not the president. Everything he done is null and void. Even if it's something good, it's null and void. Okay, and I believe this whole thing is going to be turned around very quickly once Trump is reinstated and finishes off the last 2 years, and then runs for the final 4 years after that. He's lawfully able to, do 10 years as a president, a half of a term of someone else and two of his own terms. And I believe that's what's going to happen. Look, I come from New York City. I know Trump. I don't know him personally, of course, but I know about him. Everybody knows Trump in New York City. We know all about him. Good and bad, doesn't matter. But this guy is a hard worker, and he follows through with anything he does. He's not going to pick halfway up and just dump this whole thing out. No, he's here to be a George Washington. He's here to fix this problem, and he's going to make America great again, and he's going to bring everything back and bring things back on to the road, you know, where we belong again. I believe that without, there's no reservation in my mind concerning that. So I don't worry too much about that. And so all that crazy legislation's got to go. We got the Republic Review. We're working with GR on that. Matter of fact, I need to get together with him. I spoke with him about 2-3 weeks ago. We have to get back together. But, you know, he's progressing with the Republic Review. And if anybody's not aware of what is going on in the Republic Review, you can come under, it's underneath the Start a Committee of Safety. You can come down to the Republic Review. Anybody watching the desktop, am I sharing desktop right now? I'm not even sure if I'm sharing.
No, you're not.
Let me share my desktop.
John, the basic question was, how do the people that lose their guns get them back before all of this happens?
Well, I'm going to tell you, this is how you do it. First of all, you need to get educated. You know, people have problems, they have legal problems, and then they're going to expect, a lawyer's not going to save you on this because they're civil law, okay? All I can tell you is to get the court access and the book, The Court Access and the Common Law. Get that book because it goes through everything. And when you get a little bit of a knowledge and understand how to deal with jurisdiction, which, again, anybody that can pick up on things reasonably easy, you know, you sit down and read and you can digest it, that you can get yourself into court in a couple of months and be able to file some really powerful papers that this book will teach you how to do. But, yeah, you have to be able to go into court and fight jurisdiction. You have to be able to get a hold of your sheriff and talk with your sheriff and take care of business that way.
Okay, there is a second question here.
Right.
I am trying one last time to get an answer to this. I have completed all courses to become an administrator, but have no COS, nor can I get a hold.
I'm sorry, Jan, start all over. I'm sorry. I was distracted here with my dog. My son's getting my dog, take her out, but go ahead.
I am trying one last time to get an answer to this. I have completed all courses to become an administrator, but have no COS, nor can I get a hold of anyone in my area or district leader. I have downloaded my common law grand jury administrator vow and am ready to fill it out and return. I have purchased a book and am re-registering to vote, but I'm stuck there. So how to finish without a COS? I don't feel I am able to start one myself at the moment. I cannot even get a reserve militia together, but keep trying to do. So what should I do?
Okay, well, first of all, you need 5 people in the county to work as administrators. So you really want to start working on that if that's your focus. But you also, those 5 administrators are going to need the support of a committee of safety within their county. We're not going to be able to get into the courts to do anything. And I know people are jumping the gun on this. Not many, thankfully, but there are a couple, and I begged them almost not to go forward with anything. I don't want to see him get in trouble and go to jail, because if people try to do things with a grand jury, if they're not educated and they don't understand jurisdiction and the court process and the procedures and how to deal with these people in a court of law, they're going to get themselves in trouble. But what we need to do, and we're planning for this, the papers are already somewhat in writing, and they haven't been written yet to the extent, but notes and everything have been taken. I've done a lot of work preparing for this, and it's a matter of putting the papers together. I think I can put the papers together in 2 or 3 days, and that is to get into the courts to sue in the federal level to take back the people's business of controlling the courts again, because courts of law belong to the people. Okay, we control the courts through grand juries, we control the courts through trial juries, and there must be an administration that orientates the people in a proper way, so these people are taught on how to be free and independent juries. And that's what we need to do. We're going to be suing for that point. It's only a one-case deal, because if we win in the federal court, then it's a matter of going down and slapping the state courts or any place we have resistance to this. So that's what we need to do. Now, what he needs to do And I know he just said that he can't start it, but he's got to participate in starting it by talking to people. Did he say what state he's in or what county, Jan?
No, he did not include that information.
Okay, well, if he's interested, what he needs to do is send you, Jan, at National Liberty Alliance, a note asking to see who's in his county and even in counties nearby, and we'll send him some contacts to assist. But people have to get out there, and it starts with talking with friends and neighbors and family and trying to get one or two people together to get this thing started, then visiting different, groups that are existing. They don't have to necessarily be liberty groups. It could be a rod and gun club and so on and so forth. And try to get people together, talking with them about the Committee of Safety. Once you have maybe 8 or 9 people talking and planning, then it's time to plan a meeting. And when it's time to plan a meeting, you get and we have a list of different groups in our book. The handbook is a step-by-step process showing people exactly how to do this. And we have a list of different liberty groups or even just groups of people in different, that are in different counties all over the place. There's meetup groups. You can contact people from that. There's all kinds of liberty groups you'll find within your county. Rod and Gum is a gun club, as I mentioned, the Rotary Club. I mean, all kinds of things. There's different religious groups you can go. You can go talk to your church, people in your church. But you got to get people talking, and this can be done on the phone. First, it could be done at a cup of coffee in a coffee shop, meeting here or there, and then connecting on Skype or on the phone here or there, just discussing and making plans and preparing and educating at the same time. And again, once you get 8 people together, roughly 8, 9, 10 people, then it's time to plan the big meeting where you're going to introduce the Committee of Safety and execute the beginning of it. Just follow the handbook step by step. And if there's nobody that's done this yet and you can't do it for whatever reasons, then you're going to have to just wait till someone gets around to it. But everybody needs to, everybody that is listening to this call, everybody that is a member of NLA, especially our leadership, everyone should be starting a Committee of Safety. Whether you plan on actually running it or just being a participant, it's up to you. And everybody actually being a participant, you know, you got to get some activity going. You have to join a subcommittee and be involved in that. So that's what needs to be done. And again, if you're going to go get into the system, you better understand the system. And I'm telling you, the book that I just finished writing, which is, by the way, before I do that, I got the page open right now for the Republic Review. If anybody is not familiar with that, just go to Start a Committee of Safety, come down to Republic Review, and watch the videos, and there's some written information on this, and get involved. We're going to be training all the committees of safety to be working with this Republic Review to assist in getting a Republic Review on a federal level. Now, as far as the law is concerning and understanding law, I'm just going to read through these chapters. You can go up and just click on the book, Court Access and the Common Law, on the right-hand side of the website. It's the second book right underneath Government by Consent. And when you come to this page, it'll give you some familiar information. I'm just going to read a little bit. This book was written from the perspective of the common law in opposed to the civil law. Common law, also known as the law of the land, provides for, by the blessing of God, our liberty, which is our heritage. We, the people, have an unalienable right to have government by consent. Government by consent is consummated by overseeing and consenting to the actions of judges and legislators within our courts of law and our political process. Therefore, in order for the people to bind down our government official with the chains of officials, with the chains of the Constitution, and nullify all laws repugnant to the law of the land, the people authorize Congress to open courts of justice where the people rule and not a judge. To deny the people access to our courts is to deny the people due process, our heritage and government by consent. This is the epitome of treason. So the book provides quite a bit here. And just to go real quickly, if you want to go through this whole book, what's in the book details, chapter one is the essentials, the essential thinking that people need to have in order to go into a court of law. the anatomy of a court case. Anybody who's never written a paper, when you go through this part of the book, you will know exactly what papers to write, how to write them, how to put the papers together, everything. For all the pleadings and the arguments by the pleadings back and forth between yourself and the defendants, because you want to be the plaintiff, you want to be on the top end of the common law, and you want to open up a common law court. But this will show you exactly how to write papers and what papers. I have all the forms and everything on this chapter. Then the next chapter, we have the Republic law, law and equity, to give an understanding of the difference between the two. Chapter four is the two courts, explaining in specific details. You need to understand what jurisdiction you're in, and you got to really hammer onto the judge if you find yourself being pulled into a court with no jurisdiction. And I'll give you an example. I opened a court of record in a state court going after the IRS again, and they pulled me into the federal court, and the federal judge refused to tell me what jurisdiction is. Well, I'm in jurisdictions unknown, and they can't tell me what jurisdiction I'm in, but I'm going to force them to tell me what jurisdiction I'm in, and I'm going to do a writ quo warranto, which is a very powerful writ, which belongs to the people, in order to file into the courts to force them to show their bond and their oath and to answer questions and to explain what jurisdiction they're in. Now, they can't do any of those things, so they're only going to get themselves in trouble, and you got to push it up to the next level. You have to understand jurisdiction. You have to open up your jurisdiction. You got to move yourself back into your proper jurisdiction when they take you out of it. Or if you've been pulled into a court, you want to challenge jurisdiction. And again, they will never tell you what jurisdiction you're in on the paper, because they can't. They can't do it. They don't even know. You go to a town court, they have no clue at all. They don't know I tell them what jurisdiction they're playing in and how it doesn't apply. But anyway, this book will cover all that. Jurisdiction and sovereignty in Chapter 5, causes of actions in Chapter 6, how to get a cause of action going, how to describe it, and make sure that you cover all the necessary points of a cause of action so that they don't kick you out and not explaining it and really, what your cause of action is. Case examples and strategies and mindsets in Chapter 7. Affirmative defenses in Chapter 8. Chapter 9, punitive damages. That's a pretty interesting chapter, by the way. Okay, thanks, Jan. Motions and examples on Chapter 10. Chapter 11, Supreme Court ruling, statutes and rules. Chapter 12, ready for trial. Anybody following, there's a lot of stuff in here. Chapter 13, memorandums. I put very specific memorandums that are very powerful that I think most people have. I'm going to also write a book just on memorandums and put it up on Amazon. But the law of the case, tax and mortgage foreclosure case, jury tampering and stacking, attorney license fraud, law and equity, rules of the common law, statutes, codes, and regulations, tax court, USC Title 18, and Rule 12b-6, failure to state a claim. All of these things is on Chapter 13, and it's powerful papers that you can use in the court. So the person that is asking this question concerning how to get into the courts and stuff, or how to deal with the problems, you need to be able to get into the. You need to understand jurisdiction. You need to know the process. Extraordinary writs, Chapter 14, Chapter 15, habeas corpus. How you can write your own habeas corpus and file for it. One of the problems is judges constantly kick them out. Chapter 16, the rules of common law in opposed to the rules of civil law. Chapter 17, the right to practice law. Chapter 18, notice and demand. That's where you start off with any problems. First thing you want to do before you even go to court is do a notice and demand. You'll get a lot of feedback from that, maybe, if they do respond, number one. And number two, if they don't respond, then it's a default system that you can move into the process and to show cause and why a default shouldn't be taken against them. And this is all taught in the book on this process. Chapter 19 explains the jury. Chapter 20, the Founding Fathers' quotes, very powerful, and maxims on 21. Footnotes. And also, I think we have some links here into more footnotes, but we got a lot of footnotes not only throughout the book. I think it's got like 1,500 footnotes throughout the book, but we also have a chapter on footnotes. And footnotes are very powerful, very educational, explains things, opens up your mind and understanding of these things. And surety bonds, which we refer people to that group. I forget the name of the group that does surety bonds. But we give information in this book and then refer you to those people because they'll assist you to do a surety bond. And if you're going to go after the surety bond, the first order of business is a writ quo warranto. First order of business to go after the judge, and then you move towards your surety bond process. And so as you're moving through that, you also do some writs of error and move towards jurisdiction jurisdictional challenges. And you got to put this judge on what do you call it? You got to put him on notice. Okay. Then there's I have a chapter on ABA must be disbanded for treason, and I lay out the position on why that is. And there's a lot more than what's in this book on that. I mean, they've just destroyed the entire judicial system. A glossary of terms and then word formatting and online resources in the book. So anyway, there's a lot of stuff in this book. Anybody that wants to learn how to get into the courts and the process, the procedure, how to write the pleadings, how the trials work, and all these things, even how to make your arguments in the court, I cover inside this book. So you got everything in this book. And I did try to keep it as cheap as possible. People spend thousands of dollars trying to learn this stuff somewhere. I know Jurisdictionary, they're charging $350 or $450, $450 bucks or $350 bucks to go through that course. And it's not a common law course. It's a civil law course. I took that in order to understand the system and a lot of good information. But anyway, all of that and more is included in this book in order how to get into the courts. All right, is there another question before we move over? Actually,
no, that was all the questions, John.
All right, well, we're coming to the end of the program. Gerard, are you here back yet? I think we lost Gerard, didn't we?
Yeah, Brent is here, too.
All right. Brent, we're at the end, so I'm sorry I missed you there. I don't know how long you've been here. But we're going to be moving and closing down at 11 o'clock tonight, so we only got 6 minutes. I don't know if you want that 6 minutes, Brent.
You can't hear me, can you?
I can hear you.
I'm surprised. I was looking for the button. No, I don't need any time especially, so I think it'd be better that you just go ahead and clean up what you've got to clean up. And
okay.
Yeah,
all right,
thanks.
We'll catch you next week. I've been having a problem getting into your course. I don't know what happened with this program, and I can't get the program onto my computer. I got to call them up maybe. So I haven't been able to get to the last two, but I did go listen to one of the recordings that you sent out.
Well, I'm glad you told me. I'm going to see if I can remedy that, and then you through email or something, but we'll figure it out.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right. Let's see if we, I don't know. Let me take a look if we've got people in the queue. Oh, we do. All right, well, we could take maybe one person for right now. Let's see. Ross, we'll take you. You seem to be the first in the list. So, Ross, you got the mic. We only got a couple of minutes. So. Ross, are you there? You should have been unmuted. Let's see. No, maybe you're not. Let me try it again. Well, let me just try and hit the next question to see who comes up. All right, looks like Ed was unmuted. Ed from Arizona. Ed, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, but I didn't mean to get on the mute. I'm going back mute.
Okay. All right, I'll go to the next caller. And by the way, we're going to be closing down at 11 o'clock, which is only about 4 or 5 minutes from now, and reopening back up for anybody interested in working with us on a national level. We need leaders. And anybody that didn't make the 7:30 meeting should come to the 11 o'clock meeting. We're going to be covering the same things we covered at the 7:30 meeting tonight. Okay, let's take next person, which may have been Ross. Did Ross get unmuted? Who got unmuted? Yeah. Looks like someone from Texas got unmuted.
Kenneth Preston.
Hello, Six.
Kenneth Preston.
Yep. Go ahead. Go ahead. What's your first name?
Kenneth.
Kenneth, what do you got? What's up?
That was me that they, Brent, not Brent, but the other gentleman read my question earlier about the county committee of safety not being one. And
Okay.
I've already gotten all the list of contacts from Jan or the other lady, Francine, and I still couldn't get a raise to anybody.
Yeah, one of the problems, and this is a problem that plagues the world anyway, you know, our founding father spoke about it. I think it was Benjamin Franklin who said, we don't have government by majority. We have government by the majority that participates, which is really not a lot of people, really, when you consider, you know, the population and how many people are involved in the actually involved in the political process, most of which are just being used as useful idiots to walk papers in order to get criminals into office. And when they start to realize that, then they bail out eventually. But anyway, even like that, anything else, I mean, we got over 10,000 members with National Liberty Alliance, but how many members are actually active in doing things, that's another question altogether. We do have a lot of people that are active now starting to build committees of safety that may not necessarily come to our Monday night meeting. And people doing other things using the resources that we have online to do other things, and that's fine too. But we really have to really start pushing towards organizing this nation on a county level to get the grassroots movements really going and educated and starting to get busy to deal with the problems from their perspective. And that's what we all need to be doing.
I try every day on social media, by word of mouth, everybody that I know, tell them about it, you know, mm-hmm. telling them everything. People treat me like a quack, but I keep telling them.
Well, look, you got to just, once you find one person that you can communicate with and start making plans and talking about these things, focusing in on the point that you're trying to build a committee of safety, and then you get a third person and a fourth person, and everybody that comes, they should be told, look, bring another person. And like I said, when you get about 10 or 12 people, that's when you say, let's have our first real meeting, and you maybe have 30, 40 people come, and generally speaking, the success of that is pretty much most of the people that come to the first meeting come back for the second because they're interested in what we're offering them, and the war that's been raging for quite some time, going all the way back to the beginning of this nation, has become that was covert has now become overt, and people are seeing. So they're seeing that something needs to be done. But unfortunately, a lot of people, they say things, but they don't follow through. They talk about fixing the problems, but they don't step up to fix them. We got to help them to step up to fix them.
Right.
And that's the only way we're going to save this nation.
John, my main question is so about being an administrator. Until there's a committee of safety, I can't get my certification to where I can help.
Well, no, we have, if you just continue going through the courses, getting ready, because becoming an administrator for the jury, right, becoming an administrator for the jury, okay, that's not going to be able to happen until we get to the other side of things, and that's many months away still yet. Because a lot of things have to happen and people need to be arrested and a lot of things got to take place. So I would say, you know, by the election time and maybe a little after the election time, maybe we may be close to what needs to be done on a county level. And again, anybody that wants to go to jail, well, then go uneducated and get a jury going and try to do something with it. And I'm going to tell you, you'll be poking the bear in the eye. And before anybody goes forward with a jury, okay, you need to get a committee of safety to support you. You need to get the sheriff on board with that committee of safety. You need to be starting organizing, moving things. And we need to set the stage in order to get you into the courthouse. That's going to be what National Liberty Alliance is going to do. And that's what we've been working. One of the things we've been working on is that that court case in the federal level to take back our courts. And then that. But meanwhile, people need to be educated if they want to take on that job. And that's a full-time job. That's a paid position. And right now, for instance, it's the commission is a jurist right here in New York. That's what they're called, I believe, a commissioner of jurors. And they're all lawyers, bar attorneys, and they orientate the jury, so you know what you're going to get out of that. And you know, they don't do that whole process. And then, of course, the prosecutor comes in, which is, again, another bar attorney, and brings the prosecution through the process and gets their ham sandwich. And then you have a bar judge working with the bar system to get that person convicted, guilty or not. They don't care. They just want to get that person in jail and get things going, because they're just standing up for the status quo. And money flows through a lot of this stuff. And that's what it's all about. And it's all corrupt, and we need to do something about it. So, but again, nobody wants to go poke the bear in the eye. And if you don't have a knowledge of how the judicial system works, how the process works, and understand your heritage and know jurisdiction is the most important thing to know, but also the difference between law and equity and what's going on. I mean, if you don't have all that knowledge, you're really walking on dangerous grounds to go in there ignorantly. And again, there is a couple of individuals doing that right now, and I've told them not to do it. You need the support that I just explained. Without that support, it's very dangerous. You know, National Liberty Alliance as a whole is doing it, because we form together with a really powerful structure from every state. We have SEALs from every state that have formed statewide, grand juries within their state, and then all those grand juries came together to form the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. And that's why we've been able to file lots of, we filed the different papers in the court, but we also have been filing, going in, taking them in to get indictments. So we've been filing indictments. And we've got over 150, I think, indictments out there. And they're just sitting waiting to be dealt with, but they're not going to be dealt with in a civil court, that's for sure. But it's there, and it's been filed in the proper places, in numerous places, as a matter of fact. So, but anyway, you got to wait till you get to the other side on that. With that, it's 5 after. We got to go. We do have another meeting at 11 o'clock right after. We're going to shut this room down, and then we're going to go into the other room. Anybody that's interested in being a national leader, come in and listen in. Anybody that's here for the purpose because they missed the 7:30 meeting, see you on the other side. Sorry we couldn't get to everybody. With that, good night, everybody, and Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. We will be here 4th of July. We'll be here. Okay, good night.